Axiom, the tasty truth.
Hi there, ladies and germs. This is Elder Bryson. I am here with Tim Bide in the studio for another episode of I Like Your Style. How's it going, bud?
Yeah, very well. I say, bit of a stressful day, but all the better for speaking to you, my friend. How are you?
Ah, fucking fantastic, man. So yeah, you were just telling me a little bit about this. You're doing a charity live stream and it turned out to be like a scam. Some guy trying to rip off, like, how does that happen?
Oh my god, I'll try and keep the story brief. Right. But what I'm not doing for Confide, which is my original music, before obviously this whole pandemic, my full-time career was as like a wedding singer and like an acoustic performer at events and pubs and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I've been getting a bit of work online with this kind of thing, and there was a charity, inverted commas there, that contacted me to do a performance for their live stream Christmas party just the weekend gone. And the show itself was okay. It was a bit amateur, like the presentation, but it was all right as a show. But afterwards, they basically just found every excuse not to pay me. They insisted on paying me after the show. It turns out the people that I've been speaking to, they're all fake, basically. It's just this one guy operating multiple accounts. And so he's basically not paid me, making up all these excuses. I do a bit of research, turns out the whole thing's a fucking scam and the charity doesn't even exist.
That's ridiculous. I don't know how people sleep at night sometimes without lots and lots of drugs and alcohol.
The worst part is this is meant to be like a mental health charity. So what's happening is he's clearly like used this stream to try and build an audience on Facebook so that people with mental health issues get in touch. Oh, we'll book you in a session, like a therapy session, and then just take their money and run away.
Ugh. Yeah.
Just absolute scum.
Yeah, no, there's a one place people, like, we need to bring back the stocks for people like that, I think. Martin, okay, tell me a little bit about Confide. Like, did you get started off as like doing the wedding singer thing, or did you get started with your original music, and like what's the origin story there?
It's a bit of both, really. I mean, I went full time as a sort of a professional, like performing covers musician, about 5 years ago. Confide had already been going before that. I'd had some other projects going on as well. And it kind of got to the point where in about 2015, I was like, I'm ready to take this, you know, to be my full-time career. So I sacked in my day job. I said, goodbye. I'm going to go sing songs for a living, which was awesome. So I've done a lot of tours with all kinds of stuff. So not just to say the acoustic wedding shows, but also I've done like holiday parks, like really cheesy stuff. But I also sing for a System of a Down tribute band, which has done like UK tours, and we've done a little tour of Australia. But at the same time, I always had my original music going on at the same time, but it was always quite difficult to give it the time that it needed. And with the pandemic, obviously in the last sort of 4 years, I've not really given it that much attention, as I say, but with the pandemic, all my work written off, my only real musical outlet now is the original music. So I've kind of brought Confide back really as a solo project. It did have two members previously in its original incarnation, like 4 years ago, but I figured as I was kind of the sole songwriter the whole time, I'd feel like we couldn't really rehearse or anything, like, so it wasn't really worth putting a band together. So I might as well just crack on and start making music again and putting it out.
I love it. I love it. So, that's pretty much what, you know, I think a lot of people have been doing with their, you know, it's the same for me. I quit my sales job of 10 years, a couple years back to start doing, you know, music and live sound and lighting and stuff like that. Right. And I haven't looked back since. It's been great, but yeah, there's nowhere for me to do, you know, audio. So all I've got is my music too. So it's kind of the same scenario. And I love how much beautiful art has come out of this disaster.
Yeah, if that's one silver lining, we've got so much, like, it's been space for everyone to be creative, but also without the pressure to be creative, which is kind of the best way to be, I think, because it's not like, oh, we've got this big gig coming up, we need to make sure it's like just create for the sake of it, you know, because we love doing it, even if it, and there's lots to write about as well. It's not like we're short on inspiration.
No, that's for damn sure. So what's one thing that you wish you'd known when you started your music career way back when?
When it comes to original music, literally everything that I've learned so far with the Damien Keys stuff. you know, I think I've learned a lot from being a full-time musician over the last 4 years, you know, in terms of the covers stuff. And I didn't really think to apply a lot of the sort of common sense business kind of attitudes that I had with that side of things to my original music. Like, I treated it a little bit like, oh no, it's my art, it needs to be pure, I can't do, I was falling too much into the shoulda trap that Damien talks about.
Yeah.
Not really milking my music for, you know, as much as I could, you know. I think that's probably the biggest mistake I made. It was like, okay, there's my music, go listen, rather than like, here's all the wonderful things about it and all the stuff around it that I can show you. And I think that was partially due to just not really having the time for it, but I think it was also a bit of a mental shift. I think again, not to mention, you know, bring it too much back to Damien Keys, obviously he's amazing, but like watching his videos was the thing that gave me the confidence, go right, let's just do it, let's put music out again. There's a way that we can make this work. I think prior to that I felt a little bit hopeless in that making a living from original music was just too difficult. It turns out, you know, it's probably better than ever for independent artists to thrive.
Yeah, there's no joke about that. And for you, those of you listening at home who aren't familiar with Damien Keys, he's a music marketing guru on YouTube who just has phenomenal content for you to check out if you're interested in trying to build a music career. So what does the phrase sex, drugs, and rock and roll mean to you?
Oh, it brings back weeks on the road, touring, being in there, being in a new city every night, meeting new people, playing amazing shows, having some out of this world experiences. You know, that's it's living and breathing the sort of gigging life and loving every minute of it and embracing that passion and making it, you know, being the best version of yourself. And like, and I think me personally, I don't do drugs, right? But I don't have any shade against anybody that does. And and the rock and roll and the sex, well, that's a given. But that's what immediately conjures up to me is those, is all those experiences on the road with meeting new people and, you know, maybe getting intimate with some of those people and just loving the music and loving the chemistry and feeling alive, really.
Oh yeah. You know, respect for the sober life too. Like, you know, it's not for everybody. It's like Drew Pinsky said, there's no such thing as a bad drug. It's the circumstance, right? Like,
yeah.
I've known plenty of people who have ruined their lives, you know, and plenty of people who have, you know, just learned to have a good time over the years. So it's an interesting dichotomy to see how people work with that and work through getting on, you know, as somebody who's like on a local cruise for concerts, right? Just, you know, seeing some of these road crews that are just, you know, flying on amphetamines just because that's how you do a 24-hour day setting up lighting for a Tame Impala show, right? Like, it's a thing.
I mean, to be fair, I wouldn't necessarily put myself down as inverted commas sober. Like, I don't do any drugs, but I probably drink too much. I will say that.
That's fair. I'm what you call California sober here in the States, right? Like, I pretty much just stick to psychedelics, right? That's my jam. Oh, fair.
Nice.
Yeah. So, it's like I said, it's a different cup of tea for everybody. And, you know, who the fuck am I to judge? So on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird would you say that you are?
Oh, that's a good question. Because everyone's got a different idea of what weird is. And there are lots of different kinds of weird. That's a really interesting one. I'd probably say 7.
That's solid.
Yeah, because I feel like I'm pretty zany and silly and a bit out there most of the time, but I can be like very sensible and professional when it's also needed. So like, I feel like being part of being mature and being an adult is also knowing that you don't, you know, also knowing that being immature is totally fine in most circumstances, but when it really matters, that's when you sort of put on the serious face, you know. It's about making that distinction.
Absolutely. Like, you know, I love Bill Murray, but, you know, like they say that he's so weird that, you know, he's almost impossible to work with. So, you know, that's a thing. What's the weirdest thing you've done lately?
The weirdest thing I've done lately? Me and my girlfriend, we have a mascot. It's a toy squid, and he's a non-binary squid that we call Sally, and he's a very, very silly boy. It's pretty weird. It's like a fluffy orange squid, and he's appeared on most of my live streams actually as a little moral support.
that's fucking phenomenal. I love it. that's great. So yeah, what have you been listening to lately that's been inspirational to you?
Here's a good one. Okay, so the latest Pain of Salvation album was phenomenal. Don't know if you're familiar with them. It's a Swedish progressive rock band. Their music's very very diverse, very like takes you by surprise, like a lot of progressive music does, but it's extremely emotive. The lyrics are really meaningful. The melodies are captivating. The guy's voice is phenomenal. And every song takes you on like a different journey. It's not your usual verse chorus kind of shebang, but still is accessible in a strange way. So it's an album called Panther. The song Accelerator, the first track from that record, is just, it's a proper gut punch. What else? New Deftones is killer as well. They've got a new album out, which I think is really a real return to form. Everything you want to hear from Deftones, the strange melodies that you don't expect to hear. There's, again, the strange chords and dynamics. It's a band that shouldn't work, right? You've got a thrash metal guitar, a dream pop singer, and a hip hop drummer, right? But it just clicks in that beautiful way.
No, it is. I just saw Deftones last summer. They opened for The Cure of all bands. Yeah, it was The Cure, the Pixies, and Deftones. It was a really weird afternoon of music, but it was phenomenal. And so they kind of blew me away. Like, I wasn't expecting much, and from them live after all these years, it's been forever. I don't think I've listened to them much since their first album, and I was like, whoa, they're still fucking great.
Yeah, still got it. I've never seen Deftones live actually, and I'd really love to. I'm trying to think of anything else. Those are two like sort of rock metal bands. I suppose that's where my roots are, but I listen to a lot of different styles. I'm just looking through my Spotify now just to see what I've been listening to. Hang on, I can tell on my stats to Spotify. I can look on that, see what I've actually listened to.
Yeah, if you go to my Spotify, it's just been the new Mac album for the past week. So,
I'm not familiar with that artist.
Paul McCartney?
Oh, Paul McCartney. When he just said Mac, I was like, who? I see he had a new record.
Yeah, that's another one of those quarantine guys. He just locked himself in a studio for a few months and played every instrument on a solo record, and it's fucking great.
Yeah? Yeah, he still got it, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's not surprising, but yeah, he still got it.
What else have you been enjoying?
Let's see. That's been a big one. I've been listening to a lot of Phoenix lately too, actually. They've always been a big one for me, but they haven't come out with anything new in a while. So that's not something new. That's just been stuck in my head. The new King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard album is quite good.
They were a band that I've been meaning to investigate, because I love those artists that just evolve with every single album, and you don't know what you're going to get. And I get that impression from them. Never really given them the proper chance.
No, like last year they came out with two albums. One was like almost like a boogie album, and the other one was a thrash metal album.
Like, yes, that was, it's just incredible. I love that musical diversity.
Oh yeah.
Just never doing the same thing twice.
Right, but it still got their flavor. Like, it's not like you can tell it's a King Gizzard album, regardless of what they've got. A jazz album, you know, they've got multiple like psychedelic rock albums. But yeah, it's
microtonal stuff.
Yep. Yeah, they've all got microtonal instruments. They just love fucking with people that way. So I'm into it. Yeah. So what's been your biggest failure as a musician? What did you learn from it?
Oh, that's a good one. I feel like as musicians, we just have to come to terms with the idea that we are just going to fail all the bloody time. Because that's how we learn. Biggest failure. Oh, that's a really tough one. I really have to think about this one. I would say the thing that really hits me the hardest is before Confide was my main sort of creative outlet, I was in a band called Emperor Chung. And we did pretty well. We had a really like critically acclaimed album in like Kerrang and Metal Hammer and all those UK publications. And we did Download Festival in 2013. Oh. So we were like, I like to think that we were like a really strong band. I was quite a lot younger then. I was only like 24, 31 now. And I think I took a lot of things for granted back then. I was quite used to, but this isn't the case now, but back then, like, I was very used to hiding behind a guitar, and I was solely the vocalist in this band. So there was a lot of pressure on me. And like, I love singing. Like, that's my favorite thing to do. Like, that's, you know, I like to think it's my main instrument these days, but, I sort of, on the one hand, I think I didn't live up to my responsibilities in that band well enough, in terms of like, I was tasked with sorting out a PA for the new rehearsal studio, and I completely ballsed it up, and everyone had to pay for my mistake. And I took my voice for granted as well. I basically ended up having to sort of losing my voice almost because I was, the technique I was using was just like, it wasn't good enough, and it ended up being completely unsustainable and just detracting from the band's performances to the point where, you know, it just wasn't enjoyable anymore. And that came back to bite me in my professional career later on down the line. And that was probably my biggest mistake, was not looking after my voice and getting proper lessons, because the number of shows I was doing was just not, you know, I don't know if you find this because you're a singer as well, but the more, if you've got even one small technical imperfection, especially if you're doing really intense, like vocal workout stuff, even if one small technical imperfection is there, the more shows you do, the more it manifests and the more it impacts the entire rest of your range and your tone. So it was a bit of a dark period for me, not just at the end of Emperor Chung, but also partway through my career as a professional singer. And so that was really dark. So that was a big failure on my part, not addressing that sooner. What I did to learn from that is I went out and I said, look, this can't go on. I've got to go get lessons. I've got to get my voice in shape. This is, you know, this is my career. This is what I want to do. I don't want to do anything else. I don't care how much it costs. And I went and found like the most sort of reputable vocal coach in Nottingham, which is where I live, a chap called Mark Graham. It's changed my life, honestly. I see him once a month. The lessons are very expensive, but they've brought my voice back from the brink, and like, it's saved my career. It just goes to show, I think, a really important lesson there is to look after your, especially if you're a singer, is like, look after your instrument and like get lessons if you're struggling. Don't just power through, because it's just honestly like the amount of freedom that you can get in your instrument and be able to express yourself is you can't put a price on that, as far as I'm concerned. And if you know, don't settle for like a mediocre vocal coach or like a cheap one. Like, they can give you vague like good advice on singing here and there, but a lot of them don't really get into the nitty-gritty of how to build a proper voice. So that's been my biggest lesson, and it's something that I'll continue to invest in for the future, because it's the only thing I really want to do. It's a bit of a long-winded
Yeah, no, but that's huge, because that's funny, because I've kind of gone through a similar thing with this. Like during the quarantine, like I've been doing like a weekly cover segment, you know, recording, like I've been doing a bunch of studio stuff, right, which involves doing a segment, resting my voice, doing a segment, resting my voice, right? So I haven't done any live streams or live shows in a few months. So I did a live stream this past Saturday, and I hadn't done much in terms of, like, I haven't been doing my vocal warm-ups proper, like, and my voice, like, after a couple of rehearsals, by the time I actually got through to doing the live stream, my voice was gone, and I had, like, the second song. Like, so... Yeah, I haven't been to a vocal coach in years, and I'm thinking I really need to go back, so you're spot on with that shit.
It's you can't really put a price on it, man. I did have a couple of sessions with Daniel Tompkins from Tesseract. He's really, really good. And I think for a sort of mid-range vocal lesson, he's got a lot of valuable things to teach. But I think with the sort of problems that I was having, this might just be me. Maybe I just didn't gel with him, but I feel like even though what he was teaching me was valuable, it wasn't necessarily catered exactly to the problem I was having. Does that make sense?
That makes
kind of more
sense,
of a general.
Yeah.
Whereas Mark, he's taught with, the discipline that he follows is one that's been handed down by Seth Riggs. Don't you've heard of him? He taught Michael Jackson and Ray Charles and put like Stevie Wonder's voice back together.
Yep.
This method isn't cheap, but it really, really works. And a lot of vocal coaching you see on like YouTube and stuff, it's quite descriptive, if that makes sense. It's all like, oh, well, you need to feel it here, and then you need to sort of imagine this. And it's like, okay, that means different things to different people. Whereas the sort of discipline from the discipline from Seth Riggs is based entirely around like what your voice sounds like, and that basically singing is just an extension of speaking. It's not really it's not a different thing. It's all connected. It's not like you have to engage these certain muscles to sing. You'll end up sort of like, instead of just expressing and singing the song, you'll end up like your mind will be focused on like, okay, I need to shift into this register, and then I need to go here. And now I need to do this little thing, like rather than just letting the voice do what it's meant to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Cause like my voice has, a lot of grit to it from, you know, like back when I was a 2-pack-a-day smoker, and then I quit smoking, and that changed things a bunch. So
a bit of Tom Waits influence coming in.
Yeah. Exactly. No, like, when I first got started, a lot of people told me I should just start a Tom Waits cover band.
Amazing. There'd be a good market for that, I think. I was actually very impressed, actually, when you were doing, I had to look down your covers playlist, like I think it's Tuesdays you do them.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed with the diversity of different music you were covering.
Wow. Thank you for checking that out. You're the first person on here who has. I appreciate that.
Wow. No way. Well, I say, like, it's, we're all artists. We're all looking for, you know, if you're going to take the time to listen to my music, you know, I'm going to check yours out too, man. I can't remember if I saw one, but yeah, if you've got like that gritty, like whiskey low range, I'd love to hear some Tom Waits from you.
That's a brilliant idea. I'll have to figure which. That's the problem though, is like with someone like, it's got such a big catalog. Like I'll always be like, yeah, I'm going to do a Tom Waits cover. Which song?
Yeah, which of
but yeah, he's got a couple that are on my list of like songs to cover. I just haven't, you know, gotten around to learning the whole arrangement for them. There's not a lot of information out there online on those arrangements, so that's been a fun challenge too. But yeah. that's awesome. So where can our listeners best connect to online? Where's your kind of a social hub?
Okay, so I'm on, I'd like to focus mostly on YouTube and Instagram, because I feel like that you just get better engagement. It's just a nicer interface, isn't it, really? I am on Facebook. Like all my Instagram stuff goes over to Facebook too, and I do have stuff on there too. But I don't know about you, but I do struggle with engagement on Facebook. I'm sure you can agree.
yeah.
But so YouTube, Instagram, yeah, Confide is on there. I work quite hard on my YouTube these days. I've given it the proper attention. And obviously Spotify, you can find it on Spotify too. But I, as well as having all my like main singles on Spotify, so this year it's been Don't Lie Awake, Anchor, and C'est La Vie. On Bandcamp, I sort of like do some bonus music on top of the singles. So like there'll be an extra B-side, and then there'll be like an alternate version of the single. And obviously in like the better formats, like the WAV files that are just nicer. So for people who want more music straight away, it is there. And I think it's, you know, and it's been quite a nice way to cultivate a sort of hardcore fan base there. It's a good way of identifying who's like ready for music now. I want it now. So I'm happy to give you £3 for two more songs, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's actually a pretty smart strategy. And I see, I didn't know that Bandcamp did subscriptions. You also got a, you've got a subscription model here on your Bandcamp too, it looks like.
Yes, yeah, so it works, you know, it's in its early days, of course, and you know, and I think Bandcamp will improve that as time goes on. But it's, yeah, I've got a modest number of subscribers. But you know, I think it's a really good way. Because with Bandcamp, rather than pushing people over to Patreon or like having like, okay, my music's on Spotify, but you can get more music on iTunes, and then you can go to Patreon to subscribe. And like, bleh. With Bandcamp, you can put it all in one place.
Yeah,
and it's like a single community there, and it means that you can post stuff direct. You can send messages directly to. You can choose to send content to people that already follow you. Like, cause it works also as a mailing list as well. So people who are on your mailing list can then choose to also subscribe as well. So you can push content to help, you know, encourage that, you know, people who are really interested in what you do, and they say, provide exclusive music and exclusive content or merch for your subscribers, like your supporters. And it's in its early stages, but I think that's, I've had a really exciting time with that so far. And in the new year, I really want to, push more cool content for my subscribers, because it's just been so much work just getting the music itself out there and making the most of it. But I think this, before the new year is out, there's going to be some exclusive music just for my subscribers. And my subscribers have actually been commissioning me some music. Actually, I've actually had two of my subscribers give me their poems, and I've made songs out of their poems.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I like to think it's a beautiful idea, but the poems they've sent me are really, really silly. So it's almost like comedy. It's like, I've done one is like a sort of semi acoustic jazz thing, and the other one sounds like Mr. Bungle or Primus. It's this really creepy track.
Creepy, but I love Primus and Mr. Bungle, though. Oh God, Les Claypool is a personal hero for sure. And his work with Sean Lennon, the Claypool, if you haven't heard that, is just absolutely, it's probably my favorite album to come out last year, in 2019. Oh, wow.
So Les Claypool and Sean Lennon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sweet. I'll check that out.
Yeah, it's called the Claypool Lennon Delirium, and it's just absolutely their first release was like a covers EP, and they did this cover of King Crimson that just blew me away. And they came out with a couple original albums, and they're just absolutely it's some of Les Claypool's best work by far. He's been about 20 bands, so you know that's
which King Crimson song did they do? I'm a big Crimson fan.
The Court of the Crimson King.
Oh, they did Blooming Hell, that's a task.
Yeah. No, and they fucking nailed it. And I saw them play it live, and they nailed it as a four-piece band.
Wow. Yeah. That's an achievement. Hats off.
Yeah, it was fucking incredible. But yeah, so anyway, back to wherever I left off. We're going to go ahead and play your single Don't Lie Awake, and we will be right back.
We'll be right back.
Dude, those fucking vocal melodies, some of them are absolutely bone chilling. I absolutely love that track, man. Well done. Congratulations on that one.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So you're obviously everything, drums, bass, guitar, vocals, or at least drum programming. Tell us a little bit about the production process of you in the studio, how that all works.
Okay, so yeah, you're right. The drums are programmed. But yeah, everything was recorded at my little home studio. Very, very basic setup. So I just tracked everything at home. I use... So I actually, believe it or not, the guitar tones you're hearing from there all come from a Zoom effects pedal, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, Zoom have really upped their game in the last sort of 5 years. And the unit that I'm using is the G3XN. I won't get too technical for all those listeners that don't know what I'm on about, but it's got some amazing, it's a really good solution for people who, you know, want to get really nice guitar sounds, don't want to have to, want some decent amp sims as well, but don't want, you know, can't shell out for a Kemper or for Axe FX and stuff like that. And it's also really practical for live gigging as well, because it's really compact and every patch in the pedal, every patch is set up like a pedal board. So you can set up different, it's literally visualized like a pedal board, and each individual patch, you can just switch to them. And so that's just direct into my interface. And then again, the bass guitar, that's all just direct in. And then the studio that I sent to mix it, reamped it for me. The bass tone sounds chonky as hell. I was very happy with that. And they did make the drums lift. So I use Easy Drummer for all my drum patterns. And then the studio that I sent it to did augment it with some better drum samples. So the snare was completely replaced. It's a much better snare. And then I get all that down. I record all that part. And then I spend hours and hours and hours getting the perfect vocal takes.
Yep, that sounds about right. And you talk about that Zoom, like one of my first multi effects was one of those Zoom pedals, right? And it was like $80 or something like that, you know, just decades ago, right? And I remember having it for about a month before I decided I needed to upgrade because it just sounded like trash. So it's good to know that they're actually making good products now. But yeah, I do the same thing. I found an 11 rack on sale right when they stopped making them for next to nothing. And it's my favorite thing in the universe. So I'm all about that direct life.
Oh, no way. Nice one.
Yeah. So what's your favorite curse word?
Oh, my favorite curse word. That's hard to say. Usually when I swear, it's like a combination of things. So rather than just saying, oh, what a, I don't know, what a cunt, you know, I might say, what did I call, I'll tell you what I called the scam artist today. What did I call him? I called him a fucking toe rag.
A fucking toe, yes. That is, I feel like I'm going to steal that. I feel like that's going to become part of my regular vernacular now.
Like toe rag is like maybe like stereotypically British of me. Oh, you bloody toe rag. it's a pretty good one. Yeah. But speaking of curse words, I should have mentioned earlier on my Spotify playlist, I'm not going to mention too much about obviously the whole miserable pandemic and all that stuff, but the current song pit to be Christmas number one in the UK is a song by Cunt and the Gang called Boris Johnson is a fucking cunt.
And that's not inaccurate.
It's completely accurate. Yeah, so that's like number eight in the official charts at the moment. Mad.
That would never, you know, like they'd have to censor that out. That's the thing about the States is, you know, we can't say the word cunt, but we can, you know, blow shit up. So, you know.
Yes. Explosions, okay. Curse words, nuh-uh.
Yeah, graphic depictions of violence, absolutely no. But, you know, a nipple shows up or a curse word. It's just, you know, it's the end. End times.
Yeah, we're gonna have an intervention on that show.
y'all should come over here and just teach us a lesson, maybe. I don't know. Your comedy television is way better as it is. No, alternatively, what's your favorite piece of gear?
My favorite piece of gear? Good question. I mean, I've always looked at gear as a means to an end. I know I've got a lot of fellow musicians who are big into gear, like my friend Sam, he obsesses over different amps and different guitars and stuff, and that's awesome, and I wish I had more time to look into that, but I like to get right into the nitty-gritty of the songwriting and the performance. So aside from, I do really like that Zoom pedal because it's just so versatile, but it's probably my guitar, the one you probably see me play in the Don't Lie Awake video.
Yeah,
is that SE single cut. And I love it. It's my favorite guitar. It's really, really versatile. It's so fun to play. It looks amazing. And yeah, I've had it for like 6 years now and it's never, never let me down. Really, really hard wearing as well. It's done so many gigs. So aside from that, I would probably say the microphone that I use for tracking vocals, which is an AKG C414. And just the detail out of it is just beautiful. It's really, really, you just get so much like clarity and diction out of it. Like every nuance of the voice comes out, and it's true that you obviously get a lot higher end ones, like those really, really super, super sensitive, but it's a real pleasure to record with that microphone. And, it's currently on loan to me from my vocal coach at the moment. So I'm it's a beautiful, beautiful microphone.
You're a man after my own heart. Fuck getting overly complicated. Let's just get right into the songwriting. So Confide has finally made it. You know, you're on your international tour. Primus is opening up for you. You're flying on your private jet on your way to play a show in Japan, and your plane's going down, and for whatever reason, you've got your whole record collection on the plane with you because, you know, turbulence doesn't affect the needle. And you've got time to grab three records that you're going to listen to on your coconut powered stereo for the next few years that you're stuck on that island. What three records are you grabbing?
Oh, it's Desert Island Discs, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, blimey. Oh, I was worried you're going to ask me this one. Okay. Well, one of them's really easy. And that's Grace by Jeff Buckley.
Ooh.
Buckley is one of my biggest inspirations as a songwriter and as a singer. His voice was fucking beautiful. Every song, I never get bored of listening to that record. And it's just a shame it was the only one he made aside from, obviously, the Demos album that came out after his death. But yeah, absolutely perfect record.
I just had that on the other day, actually.
Really? No way. It's just beautiful, isn't it?
It really is.
It's just such a shame that we never... I feel like he could have branched out even further if he'd, you know, been with us a bit longer, but hey-ho.
That describes so many artists. It's unfortunate.
It really is. I tell you what, well, on a little side note, I don't know how well you know Reeve Carney at all.
Not familiar, actually.
He, if you've watched the series Penny Dreadful... with Eva Green and Billy Piper and Timothy Dalton. It's a British series, but yeah, it's just like a horror series. And Reeve Carney, he's American, he plays Dorian Gray. And it turns out he's a stellar musician, and his style is so similar to Jeff Buckley. Like, his voice and his songwriting style is uncannily similar. So I thoroughly recommend him.
All right.
But the other two discs, my goodness. The Downward Spiral by Nine Inch Nails.
Brilliant.
Absolutely stunning album, but also completely different.
Well, you need some variety on this island.
Absolutely. I can't be listening to the same music all the time. Absolutely not. But Downward Spiral, again, that's a very diverse record, and I think it's basically perfect in what it's doing. It always sounds fresh every time I listen to it, and it's just so tortured in a beautiful way, but also really catchy as well, and so experimental at the same time. I think that's Trent Reznor's opus for me. Really amazing track, and every time I listen to it, it gives me the chills, and there's like some parts that are just too relatable, I think. Like, it's just those parts just are achingly remind us, like they remind us about, you know, some of the maybe not so great things about being human. It's just very close to the bone, and again, like, I'm coming back to the sex, rock and roll, sex, drugs and rock and roll thing. You know, it's all about feeling alive and feeling in the moment, and that's, yeah, both those records do that for me.
It's funny because everybody talks about The Downward Spiral as being like Trent Reznor's opus, and it's a great album. I love it, but I just, for me, it's The Fragile. I don't know why I'm the only person who thinks that, but
I'll tell you what. My friend Tara says that The Fragile is the best as well, but it is beautiful. Like, The Fragile is excellent as well. You do need a lot of time to listen to it all. Yeah. Of course, it's very long. It's amazingly, but like, it's probably even more diverse than The Downward Spiral is. I feel like for me, The Downward Spiral is more, a little bit more focused, and it tells a very compelling narrative. And I think
that is true
in terms of like. I think in terms of like artistic quality, I think that Fragile is easily as good. I feel like the overall picture and the sort of the sound and the vision that goes into that with Spiral is just so on point.
You're not wrong, but you still have a third one to drop, and that's always the hardest one.
I'm stalling. this is so hard. It's two very, very different artists that I'm struggling to choose between. I don't know if you can help me choose this one. Maybe I should choose. Okay, so it's either Remain in Light by Talking Heads.
Ooh.
Which is a seminal album for me. Like, Talking Heads were so important to me growing up as a musician. That's thanks to my mum and dad. And that album is like nothing else. And actually, Trent Reznor talks a lot about Remain in Light being like the record he always goes back to whenever he's stuck for ideas. I don't know how familiar you are with it.
That's probably going to be I don't know what your next choice is, but that's probably going to be the one that I vote for if you're making it up to me.
Okay. Fair play. So you're familiar. But the other choice, very different, would be Still Life by Opeth.
Ooh.
Opeth are probably my favorite band ever. I love them so much. Still Life is just chillingly good for me. Again, it's super diverse. Everything from like lovely jazzy folk, like sort of classic rock feel. You've obviously got the really jagged, like progressive metal riffs with the death growls. but then there's beautiful clean vocals as well. And every song just takes you on a journey. You don't know what's going to happen. And again, like The Downward Spiral, it tells a really compelling story. And it just gives me so many of those goosebump moments. And like the, what they've done, even though Opeth Sound has evolved, where they've got a lot of keyboards these days, back then they were a four piece, and the sort of stuff they do with guitars is like nothing I've ever heard. I'd heard before, and let alone in like inverted commas metal band. I don't think it's fair to call Opeth a metal band, but yeah, just absolutely stunning record. I think everything they've done is amazing, but Still Life, I feel, is just in the right, in the sweet spot. And it's really hard to choose between that and Remain in Light, because I love them both equally, but for very different reasons.
That makes sense. Yeah, and then if you're going to make me pick, I'm going to pick the Talking Heads, although Opeth is great too. But that, it's Opeth, if they're your favorite band, how do you not pick them?
It's true. It's true. I might have to, but then it does mean not listening to Remain in Light for a couple of years, which is really paining me. But then, yeah, I might have to just have to go with that then.
That's the cost of hubris of flying on a private jet.
No, just getting above the station there. Didn't think about this.
That's good.
God, you've really got that stuff.
Oh, that's too good. What do you typically like to write about lyrically?
Oh, all sorts of stuff. It's almost always very, very personal. I'm gonna say the same old shit that songwriters always say. Well, it's all about how I feel, man. But it's always very personal. Like whenever I get inspiration for lyrics, it's always about something that's made me feel very strongly about things. Which is why like a lot of my choices that I've picked, like they're very emotively, very intense records. And the music that I tend to sort of roll my eyes at is music that I always doesn't really tend to evoke any feeling that I comes across as like bland. But when I tend to write, so I use the example, like the two main singles I released this year, which were Don't Lie Awake and Anchor, they were both written as a response to this whole pandemic situation where, you know, a whole business as a performer and a musician has all gone down the drain and I've got nothing left. Like I'm being forced out of my home. I'm being kicked out of my house. It was really, really tough. You don't know where the next meal's going to come from. You don't know if you're still going to be, you know, you're going to be living on the street. And you're beholden to, you know, instead of, you know, and you, oh God, it's quite hard to talk about actually those songs, but it's always about something that really makes me feel strongly. So that was obviously directly related to my own personal situations at the time. I've written a lot about, kind of like every typical male songwriter, I've written a lot about my relationships and like my experiences with women, but also other people's like romantic relationships from the outside as well. I like to think that when I do write about those kinds of things, it's not in your sort of stereotypical, well, I loved you and you broke my heart. Which is, you know, obviously completely relatable, but we've heard that song a million times before. So I like to think I look at that from a more unique perspective.
I've never heard that song.
You've never heard the I Love You, But...
No, I'm just taking a piss.
I'm trying to think of a good example. So, because we've all written love songs, we've all heard love songs. So there's a track, the B-side for Don't Lie Awake is a little track called The Railroad. Which you can get on Bandcamp. So it's not on Spotify, it's just on the Bandcamp, at least at the moment. And that's a very different song. It's very acoustic led. It kind of sounds a bit like Morning View era Incubus, that kind of stuff. And that is a story of so it's a relationship from a good 4 or 5 years ago where you've got a situation, you've got two people that are in love and they're really happy with each other. It doesn't really go into the reason, well, but ultimately, because there is one really important life choice that is completely, we basically, she wanted children and I didn't, right? And so that's like a really big, like, incompatibility, even though everything else in the relationship is tickety-boo, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so British. Tickety-boo. And it's kind of like, it's kind of two aspects. On the one hand, it's like, why did we keep doing this knowing that it was never going to work out? But like, you end up so wrapped up in those like intense emotions and how you feel about this person and how you enjoy each other's company and what you do together, that you don't want to think about that impending doom. That's why it's called the railroad, because you've tied yourselves to the railroad. You're just waiting for the fucking train to run over you, because it's going to come.
Yeah.
It's coming.
That's a great metaphor.
And part of it was like, we got together because we used to sing together. So we're both, and she did like a semi-professional gigging thing for a while. And so like, she ended up going off to Australia in the end. And that was part of the reason for the breakup. Like, she wanted to go out there with the option to start a family if she wanted. And she knows she was never going to get that from me. And she wanted to build a future out there. And, you know, it was the right thing to do. Obviously, I was heartbroken. But at the same time, like, I would still go out and see her, like, watch her playing shows and on Facebook and stuff. And, like, she's singing all these love songs. Like she's big into her pop, you know, like sort of mainstream pop and, like, blues and stuff. She's singing all these love songs, and that's what inspired me. She's like, why are you singing about love? Like, you literally just, like, you've already admitted that you love me and that you, but we've just broken up. You've thrown that love away. Stop singing about how you, like, enjoy all the romance and stuff, because you threw it away. What's going on?
Oh, she's projecting. She's faking it till she makes it. There's a lot of psychological things behind that.
I totally understand that, but it was like, it was where my brain was in that moment.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I know. Makes sense. Like, just because like you've broken up with somebody that you love doesn't mean you can't sing love songs. That's ridiculous. But it's also like, that's the where my brain was in that like little time capsule. So,
and it's also entirely possible she was just doing it to fuck with you.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I can name some women that would do that, but she certainly wouldn't. And I know some guys have done that as well to other women. So yeah, it's not a nice thing to do, but no, she wouldn't have done that. She's a good soul, and you know, we're best mates now. You know, we've got a healthy friendship, and
that's awesome.
It was the breakup was really, really hard, but I got a really good song out of it. So you know,
hey, that's half the battle. And yeah, you mentioned earlier about like writing about other people's, you know, bad relationships. I love that so much. Just, it's an opportunity to be judgmental without actually being judgmental.
Yeah, true. Judging. I think is the right phrase. I'm judgmental. I'm just judging. I judge your situation to be fucked.
But you don't have to know that it's about you. This could just, I'm a songwriter. I draw my inspiration from lots of places.
That's it. I mean, sometimes they like to get the ego boost that I've written a song about. You took the effort to write a song about me. There's a song on the B-side for Anchor. Anchor is a very nice acoustic-y song, but The Leech is like this aggressive like prog metal thing, and that one's about my old friend Kyle, who's basically he's I'll make it brief, I'll keep the relationship story brief, we're talking about it way too long, but he was with a woman for a while who had cheated on him like 3 or 4 times, and actually like, but he kept staying with her. And I was like, look, if someone's cheated on you, they don't want to be with you. Like, she's literally just using you. Like, why would you do this? And like, and I brought this song back because I saw it in another one of my friend's relationships. Like, I can remember, so my friend, she had a similar situation where she kept coming back to this guy that was constantly cheating on her. I was just like, this person is just a leech. They're just leeching off your affection and your time. And they're going out and they're fucking someone else. Just stop it. Stop it now. Cut them off. So yeah, but yeah, I the relationship stuff, all the very personal stuff, and also stuff that makes me feel strongly is, you know, quite often I end up writing about, you know, politics and social justice and stuff like that. Like, my next single is extremely angry, very punk rock, very politically driven, kind of inspired by the new System of a Down stuff. Sort of political situation in my country is absolutely ridiculous, and when people turn around and say, oh, musicians shouldn't write about politics, they should just shut up and play. I'm like, you literally have no idea. I will stop. I'm going to stop myself before I go off on a rant. But yeah, so a lot of my recent material has been, I don't like to actually pigeonhole music as political music, because it's not, politics doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's connected to everything that we do. You know, whether that's because you've lost your whole livelihood, you know, your whole business has been tanked and you've got no income anymore, or, and you know, the government isn't supporting you, or, you know, your media is scapegoating refugees, you know, instead of like, and the children in your country are going starving because they get, you know, their parents get paid poverty wages. You know, these are all deeply emotive subjects. And, you know, we obviously want to approach these with a rational mind, but at the same time, like, being angry at these issues is not a bad thing. Now, anger is not the same as hate.
Sometimes it is, but yeah.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'll happy go on record saying that I hate Boris Johnson, for example, but like, I don't hate him for, you know, anything, you know, that's out of his control. I hate him for the choices that he has made, which I think is completely valid.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, we could go on one-upping each other on which of our countries has the dumber leader.
It's true. It's a bit of an interesting competition. I mean, to be fair, you've got maybe like some good direction or like a better direction. I'm not going to say, you know, but maybe coming. We've just got fucking cliff edge Brexit coming soon. And we're all dreading it. All of us, we're all fucking dreading it, except a small handful of people sat there masturbating with Union Jack.
Yep, that sounds about right. We've got people, and I somewhat worry about this because there's a good contingent of people in our country that are convinced that the election was completely fraudulent, and they're ready to take up arms about it. And I
believe it.
Yeah, I don't think that they actually will because, you know, they're too comfortable to actually do it. But it's a frightening thought. But. Yeah, man, it's just the absurdity of shit. And at least the thing is, I can say is at least that, you know, we're not in the Philippines with Duterte because he makes Trump and Johnson look almost reasonable.
Yeah, we do have to have some perspective, you know. At least it's not, you know, like China or, you know, Bolsonaro or someone like that.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, at least we've got that going on. But if you ever get a chance to go on Facebook and look at the Dead Kennedys Facebook page, you want to have a good laugh at the amount of people telling the Dead Kennedys to not put politics in their music.
Believe it. Did you see the footage of those Trump supporters blasting blasting out some Rage Against the Machine? I'm like, you guys have no idea.
They are
like,
thoroughly convinced that they are the ones raging against the machine. They are thoroughly convinced that, you know, there's a whole cabal of pedophile ring running elites running the scene, and that Donald Trump is here to save them in the name of Jesus. It's mind blowing. But
the level of copium is just off the chart.
I don't know how, like, I don't know where there's nowhere to get this information other than memes too. Like, it's not even like there's any news source, like, or even like a blog putting this stuff out. It's literally just fucking memes on Facebook with like an American flag in the background of Donald Trump carrying two, you know, babies that weren't aborted, running away from robot Hillary Clinton. Like, it's that's their entire political philosophy.
Yeah, couldn't make it up. And then you criticize their point, and the only response they think they have is, oh, well, the left can't meme. Well, what? And you're after the meme you just posted? Come on.
And the left in the United States is about, you know, due to our brilliant two-party system, is about 1.5 degrees left of the right currently. So it's not like there's this huge, you know, it's a slightly better response to the pandemic that we're looking forward to here. Once Trump's out of office is about the extent of it, I think. But
I
think it's time to move back into music at this point. Because I can go on this rant for years. So what drives you as a musician?
That's really hard. That's surprising. I just love doing it, I suppose. Like, I love creating. You know, hearing music, making music, you know, it's just an experience. Again, it comes back to the whole sex, drugs, and rock and roll thing. It's all part of that one thing. It's about being the best version of yourself. It's about telling stories and connecting with people. And I know that all sounds very cliche. You hear it from everybody artist. I just want to connect, you know, make the world a better place. Like, we all want to do that. And I like to think that, you know, when you are the best version of yourself, you've got something unique to offer, you know, for people that, you know, may have not heard such a thing before. You need to get a lot of copycat artists that sort of go, oh, well, you know, that sort of style worked, and so we're going to leech off of that style and maybe be a bit famous for a minute. I feel like what really drives me, to be fair, with music, when it comes to creating original music, I always try to do something different every time. A lot of people are trying to look for like the perfect formula. If we just create this like perfect formula, we can keep churning out songs all the time and people will lap it up. And I'm like, when you think about it, the greatest artists of our time, like we're talking like Trent Reznor, David Bowie, Kate Bush, all Prince, all these like visionaries, they've changed it up every single time. They've never just gone, okay, that's my sound, I'll just do variations on that. Well, I like to think I'm striving to do something different every time, even though Confide is, you know, definitely a rock project. I don't know if you've got a chance to listen to Anchor or C'est La Vie or Unashamed at all.
Oh, yeah.
Those two songs are like, even though they are all rock songs in some form or another, they're all sonically very different. Like, one's like a doom metal thing, one's a jazzy folk thing, one of them is like a funk type arrangement. So what drives me is to try and create something new every time. If I feel like I'm repeating myself, I'm not really interested.
No.
Because I always try, and especially since I like to try and push the limits of what guitar music can do, because it's been around for so long and the guitar is in so almost all popular music, especially since a lot of chart music is now, and like a lot of music, oh, it's not just that, that's not fair, not just chart music, a lot of music is now all electronic based, it's all synthesized, and you know, there's a lot of amazing music like that I love. But I feel like there's still so much that you can still do with the guitar that hasn't yet been done with before you bring the keyboards in. It's like I mentioned before with Opeth, if it isn't a still life in Blackwater Park especially, there's loads of amazing guitar layers are going on. And sometimes not even that many, but what's happening is, you know, it's not the usual chords or the usual sequences, or the usual riffs you're used to hearing, but they still make you bang your head. They still make you sing along. And, yeah, I feel like, yeah, well, it's all a bit, again, I'm going in a bit of a long winded way, but what really interests me is like music, even though like fucking billions and billions of hours of music exists in history, like there's still something you can do new. And that really fascinates me. You can still do something that no one's done before, even if it's only in a slight way. Because there's so many endless possibilities. And I feel like some people don't use that to the fullest extent, whereas it could be. If that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. A couple points to touch on. One, you brought up like how, you know, great musicians evolve and, you know, the people who write the same thing over, and they tend to be forgotten over the years, right? But it's so funny that you brought up David Bowie in that, because a friend of mine told me the other day that his favorite David Bowie song was The Laughing Gnome, and it's off his first
record.
And yeah, I'm like, really? Like, that is some ridiculous shit. And you listen to like the earliest of Bowie's work and it's pretty fucking silly sometimes, right? And then you listen to like Lodger and you're like, holy fuck, like that's a progression, right? Like it's just I can't wrap my head around it. And another thing you said is, you know, like there's a lot of music that's like, even a Muse has gone from guitar to synthesizers over the years, right? Like with me, when I went from just being guitar, and like I was so like my first couple records, right? I was so dedicated to just being guitar that it was just a drum machine with kick and snare, and then I split my guitar signal through an octaver so that one went into a bass amp. So I was playing guitar and bass at the same time. And that was it. That was like, I was being a purist. And if this is what I can do live, that's what I'm going to do. And then gradually I started wanting to add in some keyboards and stuff, but like, I still wanted to keep it pure. So now like all of my keyboards are like sampled Rhodes and sampled orchestral instruments, right? There's nothing like, there's no, square wave processing going in there at all. So like, I don't know. I get that.
Totally. Well, that's really interesting. I'm looking forward to digging more into your discography, man. Cause the songs I've heard have been, they sound really like, so you quite a unique sound that you've got. And, it's not something I could say I've really like 100% heard before. Like, you can obviously hear where the influences have come from, but the you know, it's greater than just the sum of its parts. Does that make sense?
It does, and I appreciate that, because yeah, like I like to wear my influences on my sleeve. Like, there are songs you can tell that I definitely had a little bit of David Bowie influence. There's songs where you can definitely hear a little bit of Trent Reznor influence. There's stuff out there, you know, a little James Murphy influence here and there, but because of the vast array of influences like that go into it, yeah, it's I feel like I've been making something pretty new. And so yeah, that's what it's about. A lot of people want to hear the same thing over and over again. That's why reggaeton's the most popular genre of music in the world.
Didn't know that at all.
Yeah. Reggaeton is currently the most popular genre of music in the world, and it's kind of come over into the American charts and pop music here, and it's just the same like the same thing over and over again, and it's all my roommate listens to, and it's
But so, the one thing that's getting me that I hear it like in almost all music is that I hate doing this. I don't like talking like negatively about music, to be honest. Like, but like, I'm just so tired of hearing it. I'm so tired of hearing that 808 fucking hi-hat beat you hear in all the trap songs, which is now filtered out into all the pop songs and all like the all just the ordinary hip hop. It's literally on everything, and I hate it so much.
You're right, because as somebody who loves hip hop, like as a rock guy who loves hip hop, I fucking hate that shit so much.
it's letting hip hop down, as far as I'm concerned. That shit, like, it's just such a. Maybe like here and there, but it's not even a very good sample either. It's just so thin and weedy and. And I wouldn't mind so much if it just wasn't on everything.
Oh yeah. There's so many hip hop songs out there that I honestly feel if you like took that 808 and replaced it with like a real drummer, it would make infinitely better.
Oh, straight away. Yeah. And even not even necessarily, I mean, real drums would be cool, but not even just a different electronic kit or something like that. Just different sound on this. When my sister showed it to me for the first time, I'd never heard trap music before, and she showed me that. I was like, that hi-hat sounds like someone scraping their keys along the top of a baked bean tin. Like,
it sounds like Lars Ulrich thought he was being clever.
Oh, that's a dangerous place. We don't go there. Yeah. Thanks for that, Lars. Bonk, 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 bonk.
Is that a snare?
No, it's a wood block. It's a wood block. Yep.
Oh man. So it's time for my favorite part of the show. It's hot takes with Elder Bryson. What's your unpopular opinion that you know is true that everyone else disagrees with you on?
This is a good one. I remember having two discussions about, I just actually commented on a Facebook thread about this recently, actually. Okay, so emo is not a musical style. Emo is a subculture, definitely. You could say that a band is emo, maybe like part of that culture, but as like an actual musical style, are there actually any musical indicators of emo? Because every time I feel like someone talks about an emo band, they're referring to a band that is completely different to the next one. So the following bands could be construed as emo. Panic at the Disco, Avenged Sevenfold, My Chemical Romance. What's the band that goes Downfall of Us All. Oh, who did that one? That's really annoying me. They're actually really good. I'm going to quit. You can edit my stuff out.
No, that's dang for sure. I loved it. Some of it didn't come through quite. Like, there was a little bit of dropout, like, so I didn't quite get what you were doing. But
Day to Remember. There we go.
Yep. Okay, now it makes sense.
him or all these different bands, like all those bands I just mentioned are totally different stylists.
You can even take it further and be like Bright Eyes and Dashboard Confessional are also considered emo bands.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I love Bright Eyes. Bright Eyes are amazing. But all these bands, like they all like sonically are completely different. There are no like musical similarities. What the similarities that they have is the haircut. and maybe the lyrical subject matter, maybe you could say that, but then it's like, well, okay, emo bands, what is the lyrical subject matter? Oh, they talk about how their heart's broken and like how they're so upset. I was like, well, that's literally every songwriter from the beginning of time. You just described
90% of Stadium Country.
and most music, like, you know, when we write music, it's because we're sad, you know, we have a negative emotion, we want to get rid of it. And so we put our sadness or our anger or frustration into music. And so like, it seems strange then to draw the lyrical comparison. Maybe they sing about it in a very particularly like maybe melodramatic way, possibly. You could say that, but for the most part, the similarity is like the culture of emo. So some people will say that grunge is not a musical style, and it was certainly oversimplified, like to say that Soundgarden and Pearl Jam and Alice in Chains and Nirvana and Screaming Trees and Garbage and Skunk Anansie are all the same style. They're all 90s rock, I suppose. And maybe grunge has a bit of a similarity in that they're all a reaction against like 80s hair metal. Okay, let's stop playing guitar solos and swinging our dicks about and let's just actually write some song. Whereas with emo, like the stylistic variation is so huge. So I don't even think you can box it in the same way as grunge. Like, emo doesn't exist. It's a subculture, but it is not a musical style. There's my hot take.
That's a good hot take. Now, I would say that there is an addendum to that. There is the subsection of like emotional pop punk. Your bands like your Taking Back Sundays, your Metro Stations. You know and that maybe could fit under like a designation of emo. Like there are specific bands, you know, Cursive, Thursday, you know, those kind of, but still they're all sonically very different. Yeah.
Yeah, but you literally described it as pop punk. So like it's pop punk.
Yeah. But yeah, no, you're spot on. And you know, describing it as, you know, songs about like deep, like, you know, heartbreak and emotional, you know, then Carrie Underwood is an emo band. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Like Adele is an emo band.
Yep. All right.
Ed Sheeran's an emo.
Yeah, because some of my absolute favorite acts of all time, like Brand New, is considered an emo band, but like, fuck, their last album's almost progressive. Like,
yeah, I was really impressed with that record. Actually, it reminds me a lot of Radiohead and like Gomez and that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, no, fucking 151 is probably like my favorite song to come out in the past decade off that record, and yeah, fucking they just absolutely nailed it. And then, you know, like they got the lead singer got Me Too'd from, you know, like 15 years ago when he was 19 sending a dick pic on Twitter to a 17-year-old. So, you know, there's that.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, that's you're you might be right. Like I've never really thought about it that way, but maybe emo isn't a genre. Like that's a thing. Because then, you know, and also with grunge, like that also kind of makes sense, because really when you think about it, like grunge is just kind of an extension of like post punk.
Yeah, in a way, yeah, and it's also it's like an evolution of heavy metal in a way, in some cases, like especially on the heavier end, like Soundgarden, Alice in Chains. Like Alice in Chains definitely started out as just like as a metal band, but with grittier vocals and eviler harmonies and stuff. And then it sort of evolved more grittier sounds as they went on. And Nirvana really probably is closer to like punk in its arrangements, really, just with like those more, you know, slightly more intelligent like lyrics and like more interesting melodies, I suppose. And then Pearl Jam, I just thought, yeah, it's just straight up rock and roll. It's just rock band.
Yeah.
But with like that 90s voice. but I think grunge is unified in its in that it was a big evolution from how rock was in the 80s. Like, we had all these, you know.
I think and, you know, the unifying again, factor with grunge is just Butch Vig. I think that's all it is.
To be fair, nothing too much against, even though like 80s rock isn't usually my thing, it's a little bit too cheesy for me, even though there's a lot of great musicianship out of that era. I think grunge, I think one of the defining factors is that it was so different from the 80s, and that it was slower, it was grungier, everyone was on drugs and depressed, rather than like in the 80s where everyone's like, you know, having orgies and wearing leather and stuff. So
all my favorite bands from the 80s were on drugs and depressed, but you know, like I
fair dues, mine too, to be fair.
Don't get me wrong, I have had some fun at a Poison show, but when I think about like the best rock of the 80s, I'm thinking about Joy Division and The Cure and Susie, that's where I'm going there. But you know, that also kind of was a trend that started in the late 70s and went through to the mid 90s. So it's also subjective.
Yeah, exactly. And for the record, I absolutely love grunge. Grunge is amazing, and Chris Cornell is one of my heroes.
Oh yeah.
And like all the 90s bands, really. Well, not all the 90s band, but in that style, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, we're not talking about 98 Degrees and Savage Garden here. I get it. So what are you hoping to accomplish with Confide in the years to come?
Well, my main aim, you know, as Damo always said, you've always got to work out what good looks like, right? I will be happy if, I'm able to make a living from doing original music and that I don't have to go back and play weddings.
That sounds lovely.
As much as I do like playing weddings, don't get me wrong, even though the choice of music is cringe, the actual show is loads of fun because everyone's engaged, everyone's having a good time, they're partying, they're having a really great laugh, and quite more often than not, I play the parties in the evening, and those are loads of fun. You can see people getting down, having a great time, and that's wonderful. But to be honest, I would give it all up if it meant that I could go out and play my own music and make original music for a living. That is the dream. You know, if it me and whatever level I get to, but I feel like if I can make a living, that's great. Anything on top is a bonus, and just take it as far as I can. And from being artistically honest, never having to compromise, and just having a fan base that loves what I do, because you know, they enjoy that journey, and you know, have people on board. And again, when you make music, it's not, you know, obviously, you know, and some people say like, I'm making music as a selfish act, you know, it's your feelings you're putting out there, but it's not, it's for other people to share. And it's for you to share with people and for them to connect with, you know, with it. And the biggest compliment I ever had about Don't Lie Awake, because it was obviously about, you know, people's livelihoods disappearing down the pan, but the best thing for me about that single was, okay, yeah, I got out there, I did original music again, but when people contacted me, say that they really related to it, and like it really helped lift them out of a dark place. Like, that is the biggest reward you can get, I think. And so if that kind of relationship with people was able to sustain a career for me, that would be amazing. And I've just got to give it the best shot that I can, really. Keep releasing. Next year, I feel like this year was me just getting out and doing it again, get the gears moving in once more. And then I think 2021 is all going to be about really hitting it hard, planning everything really carefully, milking every song for all it's worth, learning from the mistakes of the last three singles. Even though obviously I was happy with them, there's always things you can do better, and just see where we go from there, really. I know it's obviously, you know, potentially got some rough times ahead for the UK next year, but try and forge ahead in spite of everything.
Well, and, I'm fucking excited to hear what you do next year.
Thanks, man. Oh, another aim for next year is actually get a band back together. I can actually play the songs live, because as I say, at the moment it's just me in the studio.
That's the thing, like it's been just me for 5 years now, and I've played shows with, you know, drum machines and backing tracks and all kinds of different shit like that, right? And it's nice, but like one day I would like to have at least a drummer, you know, like that. I think that could be nice, but I've had so many problems over the years, like keeping a band together, like people having the same goals, right? Like every drummer I've ever had never takes it seriously, is just trying to get laid.
No, mean, you know, that is always a bonus. Don't get me wrong. Like,
but it should never be the goal. Like, and realistically, you'll do better if it's not the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. I picked the guitar because I just wanted to get laid. Like, your music's probably not going to be that good.
Yeah. No, I met this guy a few months ago, and like he kept on trying to get me to start a band with him, right? And I'm like, okay, let's hear, you know, like, who are your like musical influences, right? Like, he's like, what do you mean? I'm like what band, like who what bands are you into? He's like, I don't know. I'm like, you know, so I think I played like Radiohead before for him, and he's like, I've never heard this before. Who is this? Right. Yeah. Right. And so then like, I asked him to play, like, I got out a guitar and I brought it to him. I'm like, all right, play me some of your stuff, dude. I want to hear. And it was just so clear that he played guitar to get laid. It's like, I don't know who, like, people listen to this stuff, but not my people.
No. Oh no. Just the first three chords of Wonderwall. That's all you need.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But I love Oasis. So that's, I don't think Oasis got started. I think Oasis got started by accident, and just like their sudden fame just led them to do copious amounts of absurd shit, I think is how that worked out.
I agree. I think those first two albums are actually really, really good. I mean, don't get me wrong. I can't listen to Wonderwall without wanting to flip a table, but everything else... like those first two records are great. Like, those are great albums. And they were some of the first songs that inspired me to actually pick up the guitar and sing in the first place. So can't knock them for that. But I do feel like they are, you're right. Like, the sort of discography after that is very, very patchy. And I feel like this career at that point, and by the time you reach the sort of sixth album, it's like the career is now being sustained by the fact that the Gallagher brothers hate each other and generating clickbait on websites.
their fights are on Twitter my favorite thing. Like, the hilarious and original insults they come up with for each other. Just every time Liam calls him a potato and calls Noel a potato, it just makes my universe.
Oh, it's beautiful. You know, just got to get that sweet, sweet ad revenue, you know, just, you know. it is highly entertaining. The thing that makes me a little bit sad about Oasis is because, like, those are songs that I really enjoyed when I was like a lot younger, you know, when I was a kid. And it is sad to have some of those songs, like Don't Look Back in Anger, just so overplayed now to the point where I'm just like, I don't want to hear it anymore. And I would rather, like, I actually, when I listen to those albums, I skip those songs now because they're just so overplayed. And I have to sing them at weddings all the time. So I'm like, that's my association with them.
Right. Yeah. And my first musical job was in high school. I actually used to DJ weddings, right? Because wedding bands aren't as big a thing here as wedding DJs. And so, like, I used to, like, it was like my thing just to fuck with people. I'd I'd play like the danciest song by the Clash that I could, right? Just to see what I could get away with, right? And then, right, just throw on some Train in Vain, just, you know, in between the Bee Gees, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Keep them on the toes.
You gotta. It's important. So, what's the best show you've ever played?
Oh God, that's tough. The first one that comes to mind is Download Festival in 2013 with Emperor Chung. That was 4,000 people. That was incredible.
Fuck yeah.
Dream come true. Absolute dream come true. So that was, but I don't feel like I'd, oh, it sounds so pretentious to say this. I don't feel like I'd quite arrived as a performer at that point. but aside from that, it was got to be one of the shows I did with the System of a Down tribute in New Zealand earlier this year before COVID hit. And it was probably the one we did I think it was Christchurch. It was only a small venue, but those guys were insane. They were mad. They were absolutely mad. And actually, it's probably tied between that one and a show we did in Aberdeen. It's the only show that I've ever played where they formed a human pyramid in the middle of the mosh pit. It was ridiculous. the Scottish know how to party. And I think most of the band's called Chop Suey. So it's obviously, you know, System of a Down.
Yeah.
And you know, most shows we do are great, you know, but the really good ones are just unforgettable. So Aberdeen almost every time, it's it's just the energy is incredible. And it's, in terms of like, yeah, yeah. And most of the Australia, New Zealand ones were really good too. But, can I think of anything else that's,
It's hard to top Human Pyramid, I'm not going to lie. Like, I remember the first time I saw Wall of Death at a Suicide Machine show. That blew me away. But a Human Pyramid, that's next level.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. And then once they'd done with the Human Pyramid, they started doing like a rowboat in the middle. I can't remember which song it was. I think it was Aerials we were doing. And they just were like rowing a boat in the middle of the dance floor. But yeah, that was pretty amazing. I mean, yeah, Chop Suey is like, most weekend shows that we do are pretty amazing. But I think, yeah, the Aberdeen comes to mind as being like one of the best. And yeah, Download, Emperor Chung. With original music, probably my favorite one I've done was just one I did on my own at a little venue called The Maze in Nottingham. And I like to think I did it. And it was all original music. I was supporting Dave McPherson from In Me. And it was such a nice change. So I'm so used to going out and singing covers to people in bars, to people who aren't listening, for my money, for my rent, and going to play The Maze too. Like, it was all a sit down event and everything. There's candles on the table.
Ooh.
And it was all dead chill. And I had loads of friends that come to support me, like people who enjoy my music. And I just got up there, sang my own songs. And it was so attentive. There was like a rapturous applause after every track. And it was just like this. It really reminded me of why I do this. Like, it was such a refreshing change. Like, because the previous night I'd gone out, I'd done some gig in a restaurant to a bunch of, troglodytes who didn't give a shit. And, obviously that's how I earn my living. I go out, I sing, and, you know, whether the responses are, I get paid. But this gig was not paid at all. It's all original music, but it was beautiful. It was a beautiful evening. Of artists sharing their own work and people actually paying attention, enjoying it, being appreciative, and all sharing this experience together. And that was, yeah, that was really special for me.
That's absolutely fucking beautiful. Well, I think this is the longest episode of the show that we've had so far. So way to keep me entertained for an hour and a half. I appreciate that. Do you have any final words for our audience?
Well, just one for you. Thank you so much for having me on. This has been a really nice chat, man. Like, I think we could easily chat for another couple of hours if we wanted to. Like, we got a lot of things we could discuss and just natter our way about. But to people listening, you know, thanks for listening this far. I know I do talk an awful lot. If you could check out my music, I'd really appreciate it. I'd love to know your thoughts, if it's connected with you at all. Please follow me on the YouTube, check out the Bandcamp. There's loads of extra stuff on the Bandcamp. Keep an eye out for the new year, because the next song is going to be super, super angry. If you're particularly angry about injustice and ignorance and stuff like that, if you like Rage Against the Machine and Black Sabbath and Code Orange and three very different bands, but it's going to be very angry. And I think people will be surprised. Again, thanks for giving me the time of day. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on, ladies and germs. This has been I Like Your Style.